Hello, how you guys doing? This is Bobby Watts, and thank you for tuning in to my podcast. This is High Voltage with Bobby Watts. You know, High Voltage podcast was already taken. Can you believe that? Like, someone already took that. I think Alan Watts or something. He's definitely not my cousin, at least that I know of. So, High Voltage with Bobby Watts, it is. So, thank you guys so much for the love and the support from the first episode I did with my good friend, Jordy Klein. I think hopefully you guys got a lot out of it. I know I did. Chatting with that guy is always great. And it's just kind of refreshing for me to be able to do something a little bit different than what I normally do with my drone work and radio control work and film work. I mean, Jordy is a great all-around guy, so it was perfect to have him on as episode one. Moving forward here, as things are going, I've got the podcast set up currently on iTunes and Android, so on Google Play Store and on the iTunes Store, you can check it out. Also, I'm set up with Alexa, so if you just ask Amazon Alexa to play High Voltage with Bobby Watts, then she should be able to play it. So give that a shot and let me know if that works okay. Also, I'm set up on Podbean and some of the other RSS sites. So you should be able to listen to this practically however you want, but if you're having a problem with something or if there's a big one that I'm missing, then definitely hit me up and let me know what I'm missing out on. Looking forward to you guys being able to listen in whatever way is possible and convenient for you. So moving forward, we're looking good. So with that being said, time for episode number two. And in this one, I wanted to go a complete departure from where people may think that a show like this would go. So once again, I'm coming from the radio control world, helicopters, drones, the cinematography world, and I just wanted to show kind of my intentions of the type of guests that I'd like to have on the show to talk with them. So for this episode, I bring in my friend Bo Riles, and if you haven't heard of him, you may recognize him on TV. Bo is what we call a pitchman, where he is on TV and he is he's the salesman on a lot of famous infomercials that you might see. And I know at first we might kind of giggle at that or have a laugh, but it's serious business. I mean, when we start talking numbers, it's insane the amount of products that sell through infomercials. I mean, it's absolutely insane. So I sit down with Bo and get his thoughts on the whole as seen on TV world. Once again, it's super fascinating to me the fact that a simple product could have one commercial, maybe two or three or whatever, that play on TV and they will sell millions and millions of units. I mean, it's absolutely bonkers. It's super cool. Really, really fascinating. So once again, a little bit of a departure from where maybe people would think that this podcast would go, but I think that you're going to really like this. Bo's a great guy with tons of great stories to tell. Once again, kind of barely skimmed the surface with him. So so this is High Voltage with Bobby Watts, episode number two with Bo Riles.
This is High Voltage with Bobby Watts.
All right, well, if you believe it or not, it's rolling. So, Bo Riles, what's going on, Bo? How you doing?
Bobby, it's great to be with you here at La Casa de Reales. Welcome.
This is great. You guys have a cool setup here.
Well, thank you. Yeah, 15 years and 4 months we've been here in Southwest Florida, where it's 102 with the heat index today.
Really?
Yes.
In October?
October 16th.
Right, so, who's counting?
Yeah, well, and we have a new state slogan. It's going to be introduced early. I'm going to let the cat out of the bag. We have a new state slogan: Florida, like hell, only hotter.
Yes.
Right?
Totally.
Does it work?
Yeah, it does. But then February is beautiful. But then the rest of it's just, you know, hot. But man, you have such a cool setup out here, and it was about a 2-hour drive from Orlando. But I like what you guys have going on here. This is great. So thank you for doing this with me. I really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
This is only episode two that I've done, and I plan on doing this for a very long time. So hopefully keep it going for a decade if I can. I don't need to be releasing an episode every day or anything. But the ones I do release, especially in the beginning, I wanted them to be, you know, riveting and compelling. And I think that, you know, our mutual friend Jordy Klein was the first guest, and he is something else. And I wanted to have you as number two. So well, I really appreciate it. So thank you.
You're welcome. It's impossible to follow Jordy. Jordy is not, I'm not sure he's human, quite frankly. I don't know what he is. My wife is from Palladia.
Okay.
He could be some, you know, something like that, one of those planets. But no, he's unbelievable. And what a guy. Jordy's amazing. And, you know, the great thing is you and I will continue to work with Jordy because we work together. And we'll get into that in a bit. But Jordy's a genius, and he's a wonderful human being. So
yeah, he's great. Well, I mean, we chatted for an hour and like barely skimmed the surface, as I'm sure we will here. Mm. But so I think the first time I met you, it was on a shoot with him.
Yep.
And you guys were getting ready to propose a reality show around Jordy and his Jordy and his motley crew of characters. And I was lucky enough to be one of those. So do you recall kind of when that started? How, you know, so I think you and your business partner, Dan, were looking to pitch a reality show around that, around Jordy. Do you recall that?
Yeah, exactly where I was when Dan called me. So my partner, Dandy Jacoby, who you've known forever, is a saint of a human being and a production genius, and genius in many ways. But and he's not paying me to say this, but he gives me a call one day about 6 years ago. And mm-hmm. he said... you know, because we had a couple other pilots. We had a golf pilot, which was impossible to sell because if, you know, where's it going to run? Golf Channel.
Yeah,
Golf Channel wants a show, they'll produce it, right?
But, yep.
But it was fun to do. That was on a golf course called The Concession, which you and I shot.
Beautiful
course. We actually shot their commercial with Gary Koch later on. But anyway, Dan calls me. He says, look, got another idea. He goes, you know Jordy, right? I go, well, yeah. I mean, who doesn't know Jordy in production,
right?
So Jordy Klein, the guy that will get the craziest shots ever.
He'll by do any anything, means necessary, yeah.
Anything. He'll do anything to get the crazy shot. And that was sort of that was the gist of the whole show. And the pilot was this guy, Jordy Klein, and his crew of characters, you being one of them, the Tiger Woods of you know, right? Remote control. What is RC, right? Is that what you call it?
Radio control.
Radio control.
Helicopters, drones, whatever.
But you are that. And you would, Dan told me, he's got this guy, Bobby Watson, man. He's the guy, he won like the world championship of drone and blah, blah, blah. And he starts telling me, and you know, all I needed to hear was Jordy, right? Because
he's nuts.
Jordy is a show.
Yes.
And so that's how it started. And I said, of course, we need to do it. And we formed a partnership with Jordy. And we ended up shooting The Sizzle and with you, and it was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy named Mark Henning, a wonderful editor, one of the owners of Blue Water Media in Clearwater, Tampa, cut the thing, edited the thing.
It was great.
It was wonderful.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah.
And we pitched it for a while.
Long time.
It's still being pitched from what I hear.
Yeah.
But I don't, you know. Yeah. But I feel like now with what you can do with YouTube and Facebook, you can just make your own reality show. And if people want to see it, they just want to see it.
Right. Well, and you know, another thing, Bobby, is you live and learn when you're dealing with the quote unquote television world,
right?
How they operate. And, you know, the first thing you got to go do is get a showrunner, somebody that can get you these, get the thing looked at.
Right.
You know, and then we really made the mistake of not listening to them closely enough because they said, believe it or not, TV and Hollywood don't like anything behind the scenes or viewers don't like it.
Yeah,
they don't want to know.
It doesn't get the same amount of hits.
It doesn't resonate. People really don't want to see how, you know, the movies and TV shows are made. So, you know, we were always kind of internally arguing about that and, you know, whether do we just pitch it about this crazy guy that will just, he's in his life that does everything. And, oh, by the way, he happens to shoot, you know, TV commercials and video and movies. And I mean, Jordy, my God, I mean, it's, his dad's got two Oscars. I mean,
that's
the part we went with. We went against the grain and we still tried to kind of cram that down TV's throats and they weren't going for it.
Yeah,
it was nothing against you and Jordy. We probably should have pitched it a different way.
No, I think so. But maybe it'll come around in a different way,
yes.
I feel like. But with you being in TV, so now that I think of it, I've seen you on TV when I was a kid with one of your infomercials. Because so if our listeners aren't aware, so Bo, you are a very successful as seen on TV pitchman, as they call you, I guess, right?
Yeah.
A pitchman. So I remember as a kid seeing you pitch a golf club, Medicus. Was that was that one of them?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I played golf last Thursday in Orlando with Bob Koch, who is the CEO and owner of Medicus.
Okay.
And yeah, I'm still working with Bob.
And that was the product. It was a special golf club where if you swung it the right way, then it would stay intact. Was that it?
Yeah. It's got a hinged shaft.
That's
and,
right.
And this was the Five Iron Show, which we shot in 1999. That ran for about 7 or 8 years. That was myself and Davis Love III.
Okay.
Jack Lumpkin, his coach and a great teacher. Mm-hmm. And then we ended up shooting another one in 2004 at Isleworth, where Tiger used to play in O'Meara. And O'Meara was in it with me, and that was the Medicus driver.
Yes,
the hinged driver. And the idea is, if you swing in tempo and on plane, this thing will not break down. You could actually hit a ball with it, right?
Right.
The shaft will stay intact. But if you jerk the club away too quickly, get out of tempo, or get it off plane, it's gonna break down. But then you know where you need to. So the product's still being sold out there.
Sure, that's so great, because that was in the 90s, right?
That was 1999. We shot that. They had a show. So cool. Kevin Harrington, one of the the infomercial heads on the Mount Rushmore of direct response.
Yep.
He did one with Bob Koch in the early 90s, and then Guthrie Rinker and some other people put a team together, and we did one in 99, then 04, and then we're still doing stuff.
That is so.
There's
cool.
There's another. Medicus.
Okay.
I'll just tell you right now. There's another Medicus. And Bob might get mad at me, but there's yet another one to come, folks.
Okay.
Yes.
I gotta look out for that.
Yeah.
So you've been in the as seen on TV world since when? Like, what was your first product, and what was your first introduction to that whole world?
Still a great product. I don't know if you can buy it online under this name, but Liquid Leather. All right. Make your jokes. Liquid Leather.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it fixes anything that's leather or faux leather, and it comes in these different colors.
Okay.
You mix it in. Let's say you've got a tear on your leather couch or your leather jacket, and you just boom, you fix this stuff.
Okay.
And that was June of 1991. In fact, my first show infomercial that I hosted, I met my wife the night before.
Okay.
I met my wife the night before, so pretty funny, and so it's pretty easy to keep up with the dates in that regard. June 11th of 1991. So, and it's been quite a ride that's still continuing. Thankfully,
That's so cool. So with the first Liquid Leather, how did they find you to be the guy, the face? So the pitchman, for anyone listening who's not aware, the pitchman is the face. And I think probably maybe one of the most famous of his time is Billy Mays.
Oh, yeah.
His unfortunate passing. Mm-hmm. But so how did they get you to be the guy, the face?
Interesting. I was a rock radio DJ in Los Angeles. And at the time I was at KLSX, Classic Rock Station.
Okay.
And hosting a show called Rockline as well, or at Westwood One. So I would have an LA job for Los Angeles, and I would have a national job, whether it be through Westwood One or hosting Rockline.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing movies as an actor here and there, doing commercials, national commercials, one, 2 day shoots.
Oh, so you were staying busy beforehand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I moved to Los Angeles in November of 88 and immediately got an agent and booked my first commercial audition. It was a Coors Light spot.
Really?
I was a college golfer. So when I looked like a golfer, I would go out and casting directors would just boom, they would snap me out.
Sure.
Just like the Medicus.
You've got the look.
I did back then especially, but at any rate, I did this movie with this gentleman named Mark Solly, and actually it never got completed, but we worked on it, and I played a golfer, named Harrison, in this movie. And so Solly gives me a ring. He goes, "Hey, can you meet me up at Gorky's on Cahuenga's?" One of the first really great brew pubs right before the craft beer revolution started.
But
we meet up there. We're knocking back a couple of beers. He goes, "Hey, have you ever thought of doing an infomercial?" And I'm like, "You mean, hi, I'm Tom Vu. I come to this country. I have nothing. And look at me now."
Right.
No, I'm not doing that. He goes, "Well, look, you're a great radio host. You would be a great TV host." And other people have told me that as well. Just, you should really be a TV host.
Yeah, absolutely.
Game shows, whatever.
You're born for it.
Well, I didn't know that back then. But at any rate, thank you. Anyway, but it's we worked it out. I did a one-day shoot. I wasn't the host. A guy named Tony Hoffman. It was his show. It was called Incredible Discoveries, I think it was. And so I did that one and did another one after that. And then I got my break in 1995. Same director, Mark Solly, called me and he said, look, I've got this AB product. I go, it was a craze. The craze was starting in the mid-90s.
Right.
These AB products.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So we ended up doing a thing called Easy Crunch. Okay. Myself and the beautiful lady named Darla Hahn. And it was a smash.
Really?
I mean, you know, we're talking about back then, infomercials ran all day, every day. And it just, you know, it was
They would flood your TVs.
Absolutely.
And, but back then, people would actually call. So it's call now, they give you the phone number.
Yes.
Call now, and you get two for the price of one or a bonus gift or something.
Oh, yeah. Some of these call centers had thousands of employees.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
It was the Wild West, I would say, between 1990 and probably 2010. It was the Wild West. I mean, just crazy. The amount of money that flowed. People make fun of infomercials.
They do. They really do. Uh-huh. I mean, especially with the likes of the over-the-top, like the Billy Mays or the Sully or yourself. I mean, when you guys are selling these products, you're really going for it.
Sometimes. Most of the time with two-minute spots and that, you have to get their attention. And you do a little bit of yell and sell. And Billy was just loud, okay? And Billy was a dear, dear friend of mine and an incredible soul. And I told him one time at HSN, we were pitching back-to-back, and I really sincerely, and we'll get into my days at the Laugh Factory and interviewing rock stars and stuff, but Billy was the most talented live performer that I've ever seen. And now they're making two feature films about him. So,
they are, really? Okay.
Yeah, and you know, when he passed away, he had a deal with DreamWorks. He was the Taco Bell's new spokes guy. Billy was a meteor, but yeah, Billy was yelling and selling, and you do have to do that to some degree with short form spots, but you know, not always.
Sure.
Not always.
Sure.
And you know, like I've got a new one coming out with my dear friend Bob Caudill and Fred Reinstein. They're bringing back to TV MetWrench, which is an incredible tool set.
Okay, cool.
And I'm the spokes guy.
Really?
My old friend Joe Fowler was back in the 90s, and now I've got a crack at it. And that's a different sort of a pitch.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it seems like, so you've done, I mean, I recall some of the most successful products I've seen you pitch was the Freeze vacuum, the freezer bags.
Oh,
was
that? Food Saver.
Food Saver.
One of the greatest products ever, and it's still out there.
I feel like I've seen that ad on YouTube even recently.
You're
like, oh, check out how this. So it was pretty much just a bag that you shove like a steak in and freeze it, suck the air out.
Air is the enemy of freshness, Bobby. Okay.
Oh, really?
Oxidation starts. You don't want it.
Yeah. So do you come up with those lines, or do they?
We all
do.
We sit in rooms and we go back and forth, and you have to come up with them. Things are sold in threes, you know.
It's just
boom, ba boom, ba boom, and we all sit and come up with that stuff. But you know, you make it up in your sleep. But Food Saver is the Cadillac.
Yeah.
And I actually, back in 1999, did a product that we knocked off Food Saver called the Airtight Bag and Seal.
So you knocked your own product.
No. This is before I was the Food Saver spokesperson.
Oh, okay. Got
this
it.
This is maybe why they hired me. But we ended up doing two Food Saver shows, and they both were huge. And, you know, it shows you how times have changed. They don't really do infomercials anymore.
Right.
It's more now, you know, you do some TV to drive to your website. And that's where you tell your story. And that's where things are now for the most part.
Got it.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. So with some of the products that you've done, so including Food Saver, I know you did AeroBeds. So with
the first AeroBed infomercial,
the first one. So give me some kind of numbers for the most like successful product
you've ever pitched. It's easy.
Yeah. What's the product? What are the numbers? I'm interested. I think people are going to be blown away by these.
And I'll just preface by saying that we take a lot of crap. You know, people are like, oh, you're an infomercial host. Ha ha ha. Well, I don't stay up late enough to see you. Well, guess what? They're running all through the weekend, during the day, you know, between football games. And the bottom line is, the last voiceover I did for the H2O mop. Now remember, I'm like John Wayne overseas.
Right.
I'm a schmuck here. But, you know, like in Holland and in New Zealand and in Australia and Japan, infomercials are really cool.
Really?
It's not like it's passé anymore.
And they run long form, right?
They run long form. They run 28, 30. They run 15 in Europe. They run 7.5.
They run 30-minute infomercials.
30-minute infomercials.
Wow.
But the last voiceover I did to update we've sold 7 million H2O mops worldwide. And I don't want to step out on a limb. I know the product mostly sold for between $99 and $129. But remember, when they get you to a call center, what do they do? They upsell you into more.
Of course.
More this and more, you know, more covers and more this and more that. I would assume the average order was probably in the neighborhood of $150. So that's $1 billion show right there.
Yeah, I'm just trying to run the math. So $1 billion.
Yeah, yeah.
On one product.
Oh, one product. Yeah. That was just one. And then we did H2O Ultra. And then Anthony Sullivan's company got the business, and he's produced a couple and starred in a couple of them as well. Mm-hmm. H5 or something like that, X5. But yeah, that's how big the business is.
That is so insane.
Creating brands. Like Aerobed was 1998. Our agents, mm-hmm. Lisa Sims was my co-host and incredible actor.
Yep.
And our agent, we had the same agent, and he laughed at us when he called us for the deal. He goes, a freaking airbag.
Yeah, it's an airbag.
An airbag.
With a valve. Like a one-way valve.
But what did it do? It solved the problem.
We bought one. My family had two of them. We had three of them.
Everything is problem solution.
Yes.
Right? And the big problem with an airbed is that you have to pump the damn thing up. But with Aerobed, you didn't. You pushed a button and bada bing, bada boom.
Right.
Now you're sleeping, right?
Right.
So, but he laughed at us and it ended up being unbelievable.
Nice.
It turned the company from a $3 million a year company to something like $150 million. And I mean, they did like company ended up getting bought, ironically, by the same company that bought Food Saver. It used to be called Jarden. Now it's Newell Brands. But that's what these great marketers, some of these people that I've worked for, have been able to do is take these products from an inventor or from a startup company to a worldwide brand.
Yep.
And that's something
overnight.
Yes. And that's something I'm very proud of for our industry. You know, we're not Madison Avenue, but we've certainly launched a lot of cool products and they become big brands. And yeah, Aerobed's one of them.
There's no doubt. And I feel like, you know, now where do you think things are going? So I still see infomercials running to this day. So,
sure.
And it depends on the flavor of the week. One week it's flashlights, one week it's sunglasses. It just seems to solve a problem that's always presented in black and white in the infomercial. There's the problem in black and white, then the red X's showing you don't want to do that. And then there's the solution where you pop out and talk through it. So where do you see things kind of heading now? Like, do you think there was a golden era and is that over?
Well, I do think it's over sort of for the 28:30 infomercial, that half hour show, with the exception of a few stragglers still out there.
Mm-hmm.
What we're using now, and we all know this, is we're using the internet and basically Facebook and Instagram, where people are scrolling, and we're using short videos to entice people.
Okay.
Dan and I, my partner and I, just did one for this great home brew system called Brew Demon.
Okay.
Right? And you make your own beer in 2 weeks.
Oh, that's
okay,
cool.
But it's really, the malt is very good. It's not like powder. It's the real thing. And so we shot this really cool spot with me, and it gets your attention. Basically, you see me dumping out of a wheelbarrow 88 empty bottles of beer and smashing them, right? Because now we've got to get your attention and get
quickly.
You to turn that volume up on Facebook and go, what the hell does this guy just do?
Yeah, exactly.
Why did he do that? And I quickly tell you, because that beer cost me $170, right, with tax, but I brewed the same amount, boom, in this Brew Demon for about $60.
Wow.
So that, and now you send them to the website with a promo code.
Yep.
They go to the website and you tell them the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the old days of, with the 28:30, we tell you the whole story and we just paid $30,000 for this, you know, this 30-minute block of time on CNBC. You got to sell a lot of H2O mops to cover that nut, especially when you add in, you know, the call center and it, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot.
So that's the half hour world. The 2 minute world, I don't think will ever go away.
So you think it's going to stick around?
Okay. Oh yeah, okay. I do. I think it's definitely a more it is a drive to retail.
Okay,
now. That's all it really is.
Yeah, because you said that now that they lose money on the TV spots.
Yep, they do.
They're losing where they used to break. They used to earn tenfold of the advertising budget on a product, but now they're struggling just to break even. So why do they do that? Just for brand identity or something?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if you can get let's say your main goal is to drive them into the brick and mortar, into retail, or a lot of them are going to go to Amazon.
Amazon, right?
Just go to.
Yep.
But the point is, you want to sell a product. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter how. So now you're going to drive them in with these spots and hope to get back some. So like Aerobed tested at a 7-to-1, right? So that's $7 for every dollar of media. Yeah. And so that, and it stayed at that pretty well through the first couple of years, you know, not anymore. Now, if you can make 40 cents back, right?
Yep.
You can still sell some product through either your website or a small call center or whatever.
Okay.
Then at least you know what you're getting back off of the spots that you're running, trying to drive that retail. I don't think it'll ever go away. And they're very clever. I'm really fond of what Phil Swift does in his spots. Stephen Quinn works, and I worked with Stephen quite a bit when he was with Derek Schwartz, and even before that, Derek Schwartz and John Miller's company called Broadcast Arts Group. These are geniuses. I mean, these people are, they can get you to do anything. Okay. And it's not sleight of hand. It's just, they're great advertising people. So
that's so cool.
Yeah.
So the As Seen on TV logo itself, like the famous red logo, As Seen on TV, from what I can tell online, that was created by the guys at Telebrands. Is that correct? A big company up in the New York, New Jersey area. Was that created by them in the 90s?
I really don't know if AJ Cabani's the owner of Telebrands. I don't know if he did.
Okay.
I know that at one point people have bought it, like, you know.
Oh, really? Just,
yeah.
I thought now it was like an open source kind of thing, where anyone, no one claims it.
But it started out where someone did own it, I think. But I don't know the origin of that. Yeah.
But they were definitely, so Telebrands was definitely one of the big, and still are, one of the big top players. So between Telebrands, All-Star is another one. Maybe could you name some of like the top brands and some of the biggest products that people would recognize like right off the bat that each kind of company's worked on?
Well, it'd probably be better to do current ones. And one of Telebrand's biggest ones now is Orgreenic, which is their pans. Okay.
Yeah, pans.
Pans are
copper.
Hot. Yeah,
copper, everything copper.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Empson has Gotham Steel, and they've sold gazillions of those. And AJ and Telebrand's have Orgreenic. But, you know, through the years, Star Shower is, you know, what Star Shower did is, you know, it outsold bananas at Walmart. AJ did this big speech last year, and you know, the Walmart guys are going, you know, sugar and bananas are the biggest sellers, believe it or not, of anything at Walmart. And,
okay.
And in December, I think of last year, the year before, Star Shower outsold all that in Walmart.
So Star Shower is the product that you stick in the ground.
That's right.
Plug it in the wall.
Yep.
And then it projects lights onto your house.
That's it.
For
that's
like
it.
$30 or something?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe $39, $49, depending on what you get.
So you mean to tell me that in Walmart, number one product, number one and two is banana and sugars.
Yeah.
Number three is an As Seen on TV product.
According to AJ, yes. And then they outsold, the Star Showers outsold sugar and bananas in the month of December, probably November, December, to be honest with you.
Right.
The first year they tested it, they sold out in about 2 weeks or something like that after the infomercial started. My friend Joe Fowler was the host of the infomercial. I think Mindy McCourtney's his co-host, actually.
Sure.
But, you know, there's Joe. He's got more energy than anybody, 50 people put together, and here's the Star Shower. Mm-hmm. And just, people have no idea. I have lots of clients, thankfully, and some in the non-DRTV world that have always ribbed me.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get them back with those real numbers, and they go, wow.
I mean, those are serious numbers. Oh. I mean, you can think of any major brand out there, and to compete with a commodity like bananas and sugars.
Mm-hmm.
Sugar.
Well, you look at like AJ's brother, Andy, you know, with Microtouch and the hair removal products, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No, my friends at ICTV own No, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's big stuff, and it really, a lot of these products do start with direct response. 2-minute spots, 28 30s. You know,
wow.
I mean, you got Brett Favre doing the Microtouch. I do the
he's done a lot.
I do the international version of
that. Oh, you do?
Show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man, that's awesome. And another huge one was Snuggy with All-Star. Do you remember some of their numbers? I mean, they sold millions.
I mean, I think you could probably Google it very easily. I would guess maybe approaching 50 million Snuggies now.
50.
I think, probably close to that. I mean, I could call Scott Boylan and ask him. I'm sure he'd tell me, but I think you could probably find it online. And that was, you know, an interesting story whereby Scott Boylan's one of the most honest people in the world. And you and I have been up to All-Star with some of your products. And they're amazing, but, you know, it was the Slanket. And he, you know, Scott tried to do a licensing deal with the gentleman who still owns Slanket, who was, I think at the time, had Scott had found him on QVC.
Okay.
And they basically could not work out a deal. And Scott, you know, and Scott said, look, you know, I'm going to do it with you or without you, because it's basically a robe turned backwards.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's what it is.
Oh, it's simple.
It's a blanket with sleeves. Hell, it's a robe turned backwards is what it is. No, I'm just saying. But there, here we are, all those, because that's what these DRTV marketing companies like Allstar and Telebrands and Idea Village and Ontel and TriStar, they know the science. It's not, they're not monkeying around with this stuff. They're not guessing.
Sure.
So when a guy like Scott Boylan says, hey, look, I really love this. Let's work together. You might ought to do it next time. Mr. Slanket guy.
So Mr. Slanket guy's kicking himself. Without a doubt.
He's kind of like the guy, Dunkelman, I guess, that was on American Idol with Seacrest and decided he was going to go do better things. I don't know. I'm just saying. It could be.
Just missed out.
Hey, Dunkelman may be happy. I hope he is.
He could be.
I do. I hope he is. But anyway, that Snuggie is probably never going to go away. I mean, there have been Snuggie pub crawls here and there. There's, you know, every major sporting team has given away Snuggies. Think about when the University of Michigan or somebody calls you and goes, we need enough Snuggies for the whole stadium.
Yeah, of course you do it. Okay. And it's just done. So we took a few of my products up there. I think about two of them. Two. And that world is brutal.
Yeah.
Up to the, we pitched to a few of the different As Seen on TV companies. Mm-hmm. And remember what they were telling us, that, you know, even if we were lucky enough to pitch to them, then 9 out of 10 times they say no. Mm-hmm. But then even after that, even if it's the 1 out of 10, mm-hmm. then even if they take it and run it, they're wrong 9 out of 10 times when they test. And then finally, out of all that, one makes it, and either it does great or it just does kind of okay. I mean, the numbers were just staggering. And, you know, we made it through some decent rounds, and we made it to TV. We made a commercial with one of them, but it just didn't test well. That's a brutal market.
It's a really brutal market. And I'll share your story.
Absolutely.
You came to me with your pet product, and we took it first to Allstar, and Dan and I had shot a spec spot with you, with me in it, and Allstar loved the spot.
Yep.
But they did an online test, which is I won't reveal exactly how they do it, but it's an online test and showing the video that we shot, and it didn't test well. Nope. So we were allowed at that point to go elsewhere, because we didn't really sign a deal, and we went to Telebrands, and the Godfather himself loved it. And he wanted you in it, which I thought was a great idea. And your lovely fiance, congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
But you're both in the spot, and it's a great spot. And we never know. First of all, we don't know the threshold of the people testing.
Yeah.
I mean, how dedicated are they? How much money do they really want to spend?
Yep.
Can we tweak it?
Yep.
You know, enough? Because in the old days, you did allow yourself time to tweak everything.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't test it once or twice and go, well, the cost per order is way too high, and we can't even get close. You would keep trying. But unfortunately, with this one, they tested it, and the cost per order was too high, and it went away, and you have it back. But you have to try, and to your point, you've got to get through over a lot of hurdles to get to the promised land.
Man, insane. But if you make it to said promised land, then, as they say, it's this mailbox money. So as an inventor, if I'm Johnny Inventor, and I have this idea for whatever widget, the next coolest thing in the world, so you go to one of these companies like a Telebrands or an Allstar or whatever, and then if they take it, then they give you a very small royalty. I mean, it's single digits numbers, but I mean, heck, if they're selling millions of units, then it doesn't. Whatever royalty you get is way more than you're going to make just by sitting and collecting mailbox money, right?
Yeah, and they take all the worry and the need to go raise a ton of money off of you, and they are wired into the world that gets you from TV, from the internet, into big retail. They're wired into that world, and then they have the money to drive people into Walmart, to the As Seen on TV section, or into Bed Bath and Neon, and all.
Sure.
I mean, everybody pretty much has an As Seen on TV section.
Yep.
That's A and B. They also put direct response products in caps in the department they're supposed to be in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're geared to do that. And that's why we always guide you there. And it's a gross royalty. I mean, it's not a net, so it is single digit. But you know, you're paid on what they're selling into the retailer.
Yep.
Now, it used to be where you were paid on TV.
Oh, really?
And, yeah. Okay. And, so until they started losing money. And then it's like, well, no, we'll pay you on what gets into retail.
Sure.
Yeah.
And they sell a little bit of everything, whether it's tools or sporting equipment or, yeah. I mean, a little bit of everything. So, man, that whole world's fascinating. And I think I still want to have my finger in it just because of the idea that you can license it, give up your idea, and then they run with the whole thing. So yeah. in my specific instance, we had a pet product where if I wanted to sell a pet product myself, the amount of infrastructure and just the marketing and the branding, whole new pet identity, I found to be quite hard, which is why just very time consuming.
Yeah.
You know, I do drones design, you know, this kind of marketing and videos and that kind of thing. But to turn it around and do a completely separate like pet industry would have been hard for me. So that's why I found this, you know, as seen on TV industry so interesting. So one day I would love to do it, but maybe, you know, maybe it's just not the right product.
I think you should keep doing it, and everyone should. I mean, everyone is an inventor. If you're having a problem with something, yep. and you can find a way to solve it, or if you just like bacon, you know what I mean? It's like
I mean,
it's like the guy that brought Scott Boylan and Michael Weinstein up at All Star. The I think it was called the Perfect Bacon Bowl.
And he came to you with just this crude.
No, not to me, but it came to them. But it was a very crude prototype. Nothing like yours. I mean, yours was finished.
Yeah, I guess
yours
3D
was
printed
a finished product.
Yeah,
it was perfect. And this was, I'm not saying it wasn't perfect, but it was rough. And that man made a lot of money because people love bacon, especially when you make it into the form of a bowl.
Right. So these little things make all, man, that's just insane.
And there are honorable people like Scott Boylan at All Star that actually pay the royalties of these inventors and you know.
They do it.
And make their lives, change their lives.
Mailbox money.
Mailbox money, man.
Mailbox money. Yeah. So since the As Seen on TV world changed your life, so you said you came from the radio world, right? You were a radio DJ and you were in LA? How did that kind of start there? And then I mentioned you mentioned that you were doing a lot of the comedy clubs and ran into some of the characters over there.
Yeah. Well, I started out in radio in Mississippi where I grew up. I did it for a brief time there. And then, you know, was pretty much told, because I ended up graduating from the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana. I was told by everybody up there, you will never work in radio. You have a Southern accent, you're unprofessional, blah, 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 blah.
You got the voice, though.
Well,
you got it.
You know, thank you. And I thought so, too, back then. But
no.
I got rejected. Finally, I was able to work my way up the ladder to Chicago and then got fired in Chicago from WCKG in the fall of 1988.
Oh.
For the same reason I always get fired, insubordination. I end up out in Los Angeles, and I ended up the overnight DJ at KLSX, and then sort of worked my way up to Afternoon Drive and hosting Rockline and Westwood One. And I was, as far as the comedy club stuff, I'm at a bachelor party, actually, 93.
Yep.
And Jamie Masada from Laugh Factory, and I had known Jamie for a number of years because he would come on my show in the afternoon, you know, do the funnies or whatever, and he would come on, and he'd send us comics and get us free tickets, and I just loved the guy. He was a great guy, and he comes up to me, and he goes, buddy, you need to work at my club, buddy. You need to be a host. I go, Jamie, I am not doing stand-up. Oh, you don't have to do the joke, buddy. Just be the host.
The host of the comedy club.
I found, yes. Well, the 8 o'clock show every Saturday from 93 to 97. But what you find out very quickly is, no, you got to be funny.
Yeah.
You have to do something.
You have to make people like you.
You're
hosting the party.
It's probably the hardest job I've ever done in my life.
Wow.
By 10.
Wow.
Because, yeah, you're coming on and you've got, like, I mean, Laugh Factory, a lot of careers have died there. Michael Richards, that's where he imploded, you know, years ago. And people have done crazy stuff at Laugh Factory and Comedy Store and Improv out in L.A. But at any rate, you got to be funny. You got to be on.
Sure.
You got to be cool. You got to do your thing.
And so you were doing this well before As Seen on TV hosting them.
No, right? About the same time.
Oh,
The same time. I'd started being, doing infomercials, but I my wife almost never saw me, unfortunately, back then. I mean, I literally had always two radio jobs, KLSX and Westwood One or Rockline, and then I did the Laugh Factory, and then my auditioning and my shooting things here and there. But yeah,
you were cranking.
Going one from the other.
Right.
The weekend was crazy. It was nuts. It just didn't stop. But yeah, I got to meet a lot of really cool people. You and I were talking about Joe Rogan earlier. Joe was, back then, you can only imagine how He was insane. His comedy, just his material, but the use of his voice, the way he did this thing about a tiger or tigers having sex one time, and he could get right in that mic and really work it. And Lopez was, oh my God, George was just amazing. Rodney Dangerfield would always come on every Saturday, and every week would say the same thing to me, because unfortunately he had lost a lot of his eyesight in an incident in a casino, like a sauna, so he couldn't see, and his wife Joan would bring him up there, and he'd always say, don't make a big deal,
but right.
bring Rodney on every Saturday just for fun, 5-10 minutes, but Chappelle was the guy that really, you know, that to have known Dave when he was 19, he had just gotten out to L.A., is really cool to watch him now,
because he's a natural talent. I mean, he was just insane. Still to this day.
I just watched this latest Netflix special, and the guys, you can't get any better than that. As a performer, you can't improve on it. But very clean comic when he was young. He, you know, not that he's really, really dirty now, but he just was clean. He was straight out of Southern Ohio.
Sure.
You know, the Cincinnati area. And, you know, I mean, the first time I walked up to him, I'm like, what's your intro? He goes, I don't know, Bo, because I haven't done anything. So I just did open mic night or blah, 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 and whatever. And he just got out there, and Jamie liked him and put him on stage, and
that's
boom.
So cool. So do you think that being around that much talent, it had to have given you an upper hand in hosting shows and pitching products like this? It had to have, because if you're feeding off of people like, you know, an early hungry Joe Rogan or a Chappelle, and just being around all that raw talent.
Ooh.
I mean, that must have just given you so much inspiration, so that, or just that, I guess, confidence, or you're just in that like upper echelon of pure talent. So when you step in front of camera, you're playing, I mean, it's you're in another league, right?
I like to think that I, through the years, have been able to save producers and marketers that are hiring me money, because we're not doing a zillion takes. So to answer your question, I will tell you, yes, feeding upon, like, you know, when you're interviewing, you're sitting with you know, Paul Rogers from Bad Company, and, you know, it's Trevor Rabin from Yes, and Neil Sean from Journey, and they're playing acoustic guitars, and you watch this guy nail it, and they're all nailing it.
Right.
You got to know. You got to nail it when you're there, and the moment is happening. You have to nail it, and then I would go with these comics, and I would watch these guys and ladies, and their lives depend on it, man.
Yeah.
You got to be good. So yeah, when I would get hired, and still to this day, I'm ready. I mean, I don't show up not ready.
No. You're ready to go, man.
It's funny. There's a big spoof on me. Have you seen it? The one of my liquid drywall spot.
No, I have to look it up.
6.5 million views. Yeah. they took a spot, and these guys are very, very funny.
Okay.
But if you all right, people hear this can Google it.
I'll look it up. Okay, yeah. Liquid drywall.
There's another name.
Okay, we'll look it up.
But no. Liquid drywall is fine to say, but they use the name of the spoof spot. It's sort of vulgar, and I don't really want to say it. But anyway.
I'm sure people can find it if they want.
But
like you said, the fact that people can just say that they can give you a hard time and say what they want about the I've seen on TV, but numbers don't lie. I mean,
scoreboard, baby. I mean, they don't lie.
1 billion in sales.
It's crazy.
What else does that?
You know what? I'm not. I've shot a lot of spots for the Madison Avenue world and the image advertising world. Been a spokesperson for big companies as well as these DR companies. The bottom line is, what we're doing either works or it doesn't.
Sure.
If the spot or the video or the radio spot that you're doing doesn't drive people and sell them, you haven't been effective.
No,
it's a different world when you're trying to brand Ronald McDonald or IBM or whatever.
Sure.
But it's still, you have to get people engaged and connect with them.
That's so cool. So I drove in here into your beautiful estate, and I see a for sale sign. So you said you've been here for 15 years. So what's kind of the plan for you now? I know you've been busy hosting and trying to produce some different things. So what's kind of the plan for you guys? Where do you see your work going?
Well, we'll probably end up back out in California. We've been here 15 years and 4 months. Mm-hmm. And our daughter is at UCF. Yep. So we'll move our office to Orlando for a while.
Okay.
And we'll see how that goes.
Very cool.
But I think probably we would like to be back out in Southern California, because it's just, It's where I can work more as an on-camera talent, much easier than flying everywhere.
I mean,
you know, the last three things I've shot in California. So I'm jumping on an airplane, going back out. Where, you know what I mean? So
just doing more spots, more infomercial spots, or do you find yourself wanting to lean, you know, in a different direction?
I had a conversation last night with another producer that we're thinking about doing a show for television, but it would probably involve products to some degree.
Okay.
But for television or the internet, but you know, just had a conversation. We're always pitching and shooting shows. Oh my God, we've done everything. We're always a little late, Dan and I. We did a show on the stone crab industry. Did we try to get you involved on that one?
Yeah, I remember
But it wasn't quite as exciting as Tom Beer's show out there called The Deadliest Catch, where people are actually getting arms chopped off.
Right, but that's been on for 10 seasons now. Deadliest Catch, that's been on for a long time.
And there's Deadliest Catch After the Catch. You know, they just shows that spin off of that wonderful show. But it's, you know, we were trying to do the Florida Redneck version, the Stone Crab version, and there's not a whole lot of danger unless you fall off the boat and get hit by the propeller. You know? But drunk. But
so that's about it.
But we'll continue to do that stuff, Dan and I, and yes, do great advertising vehicles for people to sell their products.
Yeah,
we're busy right now. We're more of an agency now. We buy the digital media. Okay. We create the micro site or the landing page.
Okay,
you know, and like I said, it's a different formula now. We've got to get people to the website to educate them and close them. You know, if they're not already closed. It just takes too long, you know, with a 28-minute, 30-second infomercial. It's just not financially viable.
Sure.
Yeah.
And with the TV shows that you're seeing as well, maybe more in the entertainment side rather than like the advertising side, are you seeing a huge shift away from traditional TV and more towards like Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and that kind of thing? Do you dabble in any of that at all?
Well, we haven't shot any features or anything like that, but I already see that. You know, my wife and I are now we're in the middle of both Dexter and Ozark, watching every episode. The last time we did this was Sopranos, right? Where we were a little late to the Sopranos, and now we got to catch up. But it's amazing what Netflix and Amazon are doing.
Oh, man.
It's incredible. They're the shows, the quality, and the acting, and the direction, and the lighting, and the aerials, and everything is freaking crazy good. So I think it's already they've stolen it away from network television.
Just going away,
opinion.
Yeah. You're right. Well, my fiance and I, we were late to the party as well with Breaking Bad. And we binge watched that entire, we added it as like 50 hours worth of Breaking Bad. We had to watch, you know, all through. And then that was amazing. And then now we're into Jack Ryan on Amazon. But, you know, I love those shows that much. But then I'll watch the whole series and be like, oh my God, what else could I have done like with all that time? Like,
you're mesmerized.
I know.
Have you seen Ozark? Have you watched Ozark?
Well, I hear Ozark is the one. And I watched Black Mirror, but just couldn't get into that one on Netflix. Netflix is dark.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Ozark is dark.
Yeah. Like every show on Netflix, like, you know, I'm not saying I need a happy-go-lucky show. Like, I really don't. But every show on Netflix is like, man, this is just brutal. They're dark. They're dark.
There's no doubt. It's this seems to be the slant. Anyway, for the successful shows, anyway, it's crazy dark. But you got to check out Ozark, man.
Really? Yeah. Okay, I'll see it. I know a lot of the aerial guys shooting, you know, so like Jordy with X-Cam and a lot of the aerial guys in the country. I know that there's a lot more work in the last year, especially year, 2 years, for Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, those guys. They are shooting some big features.
Yeah.
Shooting with, I mean, Michael Bay is directing a movie right now with Ryan Reynolds for, I believe it's Netflix. Yeah. Hmm. So, I mean, as soon as you have big directors like that crossing over, then it's kind of game over, right?
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. I mean, they're going to go where the money goes, and they're going to go where they're allowed to make these dream films and leave a legacy. That's just the way it is. And when people let you do that stuff, and they go, hey, you're great, here's some money, go do it.
Exactly.
Look what you get. You know, you get some great stuff.
I'm with you, man.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
It's hard to talk clients out of money. We're not taking it to put it in our pockets, producers. We're taking it to use it to make something really, really good.
For sure.
That's not something you're going to be embarrassed to go, well, that's my commercial.
Right.
You know, or that's my show.
Now, you guys have done some insane commercials. The one you recently did out west.
Oh, with Max.
With the, what was it? It was an orange, it was this, like a vitamin C.
Yeah, Livon Laboratories, Lipospheric C.
Yeah.
Max Murkowski. Max is an incredible talent.
It's a very cool commercial you did. I mean, rocks were crumbling, like the whole side of a California beach was imploding.
We gave the client 23 concepts. We had two other writers. Wait,
so you pitched 20?
Yeah.
Full concepts.
Full concepts. We basically, the owner wanted to see Max put, he wanted a clickbait. If we're going to do a clickbait commercial. All right.
Okay.
Max, where people thought, would think, did he just die?
Okay.
To get them to click through to go to the website.
So
right?
did we kill our talent?
So we had the name of the thing. Mm-hmm. All right. Will Max make it?
Okay.
Right. So we knew that we wanted to put him in peril, and first had him jumping. And I did some. I mean, I actually did my own scouting. I did Red Rock Canyon outside of Vegas and Valley of Fire.
Wow.
Max would be dancing. We'd have aerials flying around him on a mesa, mm-hmm. right? And then he would go to jump to the other mesa, and then we go, why is he jumping? Oh, he's going to save a gal. So anyway, we had two other writers, and yep. Dan and myself, coming up with concepts, and finally I came up with one. To where Max is on an Infinity Edge pool, mm-hmm. and he's dancing, right?
Yep.
And we want to make you think he's dancing for his woman.
Yes.
So he's dancing sexy, right?
Right.
And all you see is the Pacific Ocean behind. Mm-hmm. You know it's a huge drop because we just did an aerial and flew in and showed you where Max is. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of this dance, an earthquake hits in California.
Right.
And the rock slide starts, and now he's got to save who's in the pool watching him dance. So we show you the POV of whoever's in the pool,
yep.
make you think it's a woman, mm-hmm. right? And then just as we go to the wide shot, we see he reaches down, and it's his little son who is floating in his little ring, watching his dad dance, right? And now he's got to save his little child. And Max, ironically, had just had a little boy right when we shot.
Okay, so
and
it worked.
And we cast this little boy. He was so cute, little Michael. And Max and he fell in love. We shot at this gentleman's house in Malibu. That was the shoot house. And then we green screened the rest.
Man, that was an incredible spot.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would suggest people check that one out. Will Max make it?
Will Max make it? Yeah,
so
Livon Laboratories.
So when you're putting these things together, or just in general, like when you're selling, what do you think is the most important thing? So for our listeners out there, if they've got, you know, I guess at some point everyone's got to sell for something. You know, you got to sell yourself to get a job,
mm-hmm.
or you have to, I don't know, you're a kid out there, 18-year-old kid, and you're cutting lawns and you want to cut somebody's lawn and get the deal. What do you recommend to people for selling? What do you, you know, it's in you. It's in your DNA. Mm-hmm. So how do you approach just sales in general and pitching to people?
You always have to listen. You just have to listen.
Listen to the customer.
You have to listen to them. You have to listen. They're going to tell you everything about their business. And out of what they tell you, you're going to hear where you have an opportunity to then help them. Because mm-hmm. that's what it's all about.
Problem
solving. I mean, in pre-qualifying your client is that's number one. If their products stink, then don't even bother.
Right.
But if they have a product, you have to first of all, you know, really never give up in trying to be that person or your company that's going to take them to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
But when you finally get in and you have a meeting, you have to listen to them because they're going to want to talk to you.
Yeah,
they're going to tell you everything.
Exactly.
They're going to tell you, and you're going to hear the good stuff and the bad stuff, you know, how things that they're succeeding in and things that they're not succeeding in.
Yep.
And from there, you know, but I already know by looking at their product how I want to pitch their product.
Sure.
I know that, but I can't go in and tell them that.
But okay.
I know it.
Okay, that makes sense.
I'm right about 70% of the time.
Really?
That makes sense. Yeah, about 70%. I mean, you know, I know how to pitch, and I know
yeah.
I know the buttons.
So when you're pitching these products, do you truly believe in them? Have you?
Every one of them.
I don't want to say, yeah.
Every one of them.
I'm not trying to call you out or anything.
No.
Has there ever been one that you took where you're like, I don't know about this? Or does your heart have to be in it to do
it? No, your heart has to be in it. Yeah. In fact, I've sent back money. Sent back money. That's one of the hardest things.
Royalty money.
No, shoot money. Like
shoot.
As a talent, I get an appearance fee to go shoot, and then I get a piece of the back end, right?
Ooh.
I have since my second show, Karaoke Classic. Right?
Wow.
So thank you, Peter Spiegel and Marcia Kent for that, for giving me the 10 cents a unit, I think, back then. But
that's still a lot. That adds up.
Hey, yeah. You know, it's better than the sharp stick in the eye. But
or a blunt one.
Yeah. But, you know, I've had to send back money. I was paid up front for a show.
Really?
And the product just would not work. And the product's got to work. I'm not a shill. I'm not going to steal people's money and lie to them. I won't do it. And
really?
Boy, that was tough, but I had to do it. And I actually called the CEO of the company. I said, oh, look, and this, they have other products. It's not like this. This is his only product. And I'm telling him mm-hmm. that your product doesn't work. You're a shill. Mm-hmm. I just said, look, it's not working. And, all right, I'll send you another batch. He sent me another batch. That didn't work.
Wow.
And I said, I'm out. And I suggest that you guys don't do the project. And they didn't. They didn't do the project.
No way. So yeah. You've sent back harder. You've sent back money that you shot the spot for, and it didn't. The product didn't work.
Literally sent the. No, I hadn't shot the spot yet.
Oh, you had not.
This is before the shoot.
Okay.
I have to try the product before.
Sure.
I don't ever shoot anything without trying the product.
Sure.
It's got to work. It's got to work.
Yeah.
Now I will tell you honestly, since you're asking me, I have tried products and signed the deal and gone to the set and the product not worked as well as I thought it was going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happened a couple of times. And that's a toughie.
That's difficult.
Because now you've already signed the agreement. It's just performing, the prototype is performing well or whatever. Then you get into the shoot and it's not performing as well.
Wow.
And that's, hey, what are you going to do at that point? Now I'm locked legally with the marketing company or whoever.
For sure.
Yeah. And then I'm sitting there going, okay.
And
luckily, it did not work anyway. Mm-hmm. Thankfully,
mm-hmm.
Because I would have felt a little weird. Yeah, but they improve, you know, Bobby. They improve on the manufacturing. They would have gotten the kinks out of it.
Sure.
You know, like
I mean,
say,
these companies have so much money, R&D money. Where if the first whatever 100,000 that they make have a problem, they can afford to throw them away
yeah.
and start over again.
Yeah, or just fix them and rebox them. You know, but they no one wants returns.
Sure.
No one wants nowhere, and so they have deep pockets and they have great relationships with their manufacturers,
mm-hmm.
and they go back and they fix the problem.
Yeah, sure.
Especially when you got a rollout show or you know rollout spot, you got to fix it
because
you can't swallow up those returns. They'll shut you down, no matter how big you are.
Man,
you know, and some companies have either gone under or come close to it on big returns. We see automobile companies struggle with it all the time as well. So it's big items too.
So if it's a hot return item, then the product will stop selling almost immediately. So will they pull it if products are being returned?
Yeah.
Wasn't there a product you were telling me? Oh, I can't remember the name. Like a tomato grower or something that was toppling over.
Well, the topsy turvy tomato tree, yeah. and it had.
I love these names.
Yeah.
Topsy turvy.
Oh, we sold a lot of those now. We really did, and so they had one that hung up, and this product's still being sold. Just a wonderful gentleman that owns the company, and but yeah, I think this happened after people bought it at QVC actually.
Okay.
And you had to construct this tower basically made of metal,
okay.
All right, and then the tomatoes grow upside down on this thing, and I think one of them collapsed and someone got injured, and,
oh, wow.
and that's why you have product liability insurance. It wasn't a faulty product.
Sure.
I think it just fell over.
Sure.
From what
I thought at the time when I heard the story, I thought it was like it was happening to a lot of people.
No, I don't think so.
It was just one.
Not with that product.
Oh, okay.
You know, not with that product. They had an issue, I think a couple of years ago with a leave-in hair conditioner with one of the big companies, and some women claimed that they were losing hair, and then they had to pull that down. It's tough. Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
you know, but it happens with all kinds of products. I mean, it happens with food products, with that's just the world you live in, but you have to fix the problem and either go away or fix it and come back.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
You mentioned QVC. Have you done much work with them?
Tons. In fact, we mentioned the H2O mop a long time ago in this interview, but I had about 2 years up there with that.
Okay.
In fact, I would have I made my own messes and everything. I had my own storage area there in Exton, Pennsylvania, near QVC.
Okay.
And would go on about every 4 weeks or so. And
really?
Just, I mean, we would do.
Would you sell out?
A lot. We would sell out, yeah.
And
lots of them. Let's see. We would probably do back then, I'm trying to remember the numbers we would do. I would say every time I went up, we would probably sell 3,000 to 4,000.
Wow.
Mops, yeah.
God, that's
yeah,
a...
it, you know, it, like 99 or 129 or whatever. But
sure.
I pitched everything up there from the.
Sure.
We took the Medicus there
in
2000. In fact, David Venable, who's the host of In the Kitchen with David, was he did that. I found that years ago. David and I were much thinner back then, but he was still tall. Sure. I'm shorter. Sure. But everything. And back in the day, if you had a hit infomercial product, then you as the host would normally go be the person that pitches it on HSN and QVC.
Oh, so they brought you in to do it. Okay. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. So yeah. you're kind of tied in with the product. I mean, after all, you're receiving something on the back end. So mm-hmm. you're more or less, you become slightly an owner at that point, right? I mean, in a loose sense. In a loose sense. Where you're getting, you know, paid per unit. I mean, that's great.
Yeah.
That's an incentive.
It's, you know what? It's sort of the days of wine and roses back then. I mean, you know, home shopping in America just blew up. What can you say? I mean, I think, I'm guessing HSN was somewhere around, I know QVC was 86, uh-huh. 1986. I think HSN was right just before that, maybe 84, 85. And then there's the infomercial revolution, both long form, the half hour, and short form.
Right.
That, you know, to some degree is still going on. But again, like I said earlier, overseas, it's a big deal.
It still is to this day.
I shoot more international as a host than I do as for domestic.
Oh, yeah, sure. I guess I'm trying to figure out why that is. But I have a feeling that if it's slowing down here, then just give it some time. Then it not slowing down, but if the long form is becoming less apparent here, then I have a feeling that, you know, overseas, perhaps with some time, that'll slow down as well. Then the whole market's going to have to adjust to how they market their products. Don't you think so?
I do. And, you know, I'll just tell you what I think. What's hurt.
Yeah, like where is it going?
What happened here, I think, is networks, TV networks used to have back in the 90s and early 2000s, before the thing really blew up, they would have all of these just shows that they were trying to sell advertising around. Let's say you're Discovery Channel in 1995, sure. Right? And you're running like a rerun of some Galapagos Island show or whatever, and you're trying to then go to advertisers and fill that time. Mm-hmm. Well, what, you know, Sonny Howard at the Media Group did is he came in and went, I'll buy 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. from you.
The whole block.
And then he would proceed to run 4 half-hour infomercials back to back to back.
Okay, got it.
Because he could, because the media time was that inexpensive.
It was underpriced, right?
Underpriced. And it stayed underpriced for a long time, and then it became not underpriced. And that, along with this thing called the internet, and especially Facebook, where people are living on this other device, you know, namely a phone now. and so the eyeballs have gone away from television, uh-huh. but the rates have stayed high. So
okay, but why don't they just take that same spot that they shoot for TV? Mm-hmm. Why don't they just do that and then run that as an ad, like a Facebook ad or a YouTube ad or an Instagram ad? You mentioned they are.
Yeah.
But I feel like they could put the whole long form on Facebook.
You could.
And target it the right way. And
you could.
You know.
You okay. could. There's no limit. At least I don't think there's a limit. Is there a time limit on Facebook? I know Instagram is 15 seconds.
So Instagram for a story, it's 15 seconds.
Right.
To make when your post is 1 minute.
Yeah.
They've just released their new IGTV app, which allows you to go to an hour.
Mm.
And on Facebook and YouTube, it's many, many hours.
Yeah. Well, so there you go.
So you can do whatever you want. They can do it.
But I think the smart method is to catch them with something, like I mentioned with Brew Demon, something compelling to where they go, what the hell did that guy just do?
Yeah, something crazy.
Or maybe there's not even a spokesperson there. But we all have examples of things we've seen on Facebook as we're scrolling and we're like, wait a minute.
Right.
I gotta see what
and
this
some
is.
And things catch that you would just never expect to.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's and people get wacky. Who knew that there would be a need for 20 different flexible hoses, you know, that flex?
And it seems if one thing catches, all the companies will make their own version.
Well, they do that.
Right.
They knock each other off.
And they sue each other.
And then they go to dinner. You know, it's funny. But that's how they do it. And,
Awesome.
And these companies have launched some of the biggest products that we've seen over the last 30 years, 40 years. You know, I mean, Ron Popeil is still alive, and you know, Ron is a legend. My gosh, when I was growing up, and you know, I'm 56, I would see Ron Popeil selling all of his products. You know, whether it was the glass cutter or the pocket fisherman, which I ended up doing a version of the pocket fisherman.
I did
a 2 minute spot of it.
Yeah,
it won an award. But you know, it's still a great product. They don't go away.
No, there are some killer projects. And walking through your house last time I was here, I remember seeing, you know, just kind of everywhere I looked, there was some sort of a remnants of an As Seen on TV product in the kitchen or bathroom, whatever.
Products I've done. I did two different Cuisinart Griddler infomercials, and that's another wonderful product, the Cuisinart Griddler. You ever see this?
What was that?
The griddler is basically an indoor grill, or it's a griddle.
And
it folds over. You can make great paninis or Cuban sandwiches. You can make bacon and eggs. But I did two of those. Like I said, two food savers. So you'll see food savers around here. You know, it's
and they work. They really do work.
Goodness, do they work?
That's so cool.
It's their patent is super strong. The food saver. That's why the product has been sold a number of times.
Sure.
And it still sells well.
Sure.
It's just, you know, you probably won't be seeing a whole lot of half hour food saver infomercials. You'll see shorter stuff, and then you can go to their site and learn more about it.
Sure. Yeah. The 30-second, 2-minute. That's definitely still there.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Long form, not so much.
It's just tougher to make them work, Bobby.
Okay.
You know, there are a lot of campaigns out there, and I talked to a lot of people in our industry, and they may start out as the deliverables that you give to your client. You know, how long, you got a 28, 30, a 2 minute, a 15, a 10, or, you know, they would do a 28, 30, but then it just couldn't pay. It couldn't pay out.
Sure.
It couldn't, and then you pull it. You got to pull it.
Yep.
If your short form spots are driving to that website and you're closing people, why do you need to spend $40,000 for one airing of a 28-30?
Unless
it's just your ego, and people with big egos go out of business. Sometimes
that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, I wish you the best in your journey here. And as we mentioned too, you would consider maybe doing some sort of podcast at some point and share your story. I mean, we could sit here and talk for hours about each individual product you've done. Do you think you'll do anything like that in the future with your radio background and everything?
I'll tell you, I have a reoccurring dream. It happens about every 10 days or so. It's that I have dead air and I cannot find, and I'm back at the station, station somewhere, and nothing will work. I can't put a cart in. That's what we used to use for commercials. I can't get anything to work. It's dead air. So I know that one day I will go back. I was a DJ from June of 1978, for the most part, all the way through, until June of 2003 when we moved here. I was still hosting an album show called The Seventh Day on KLOS.
Okay.
Until literally the day before we left California. And if I'm going to go back to radio, it's just got to be right.
Sure, right.
And I may go to terrestrial radio, or I may do a podcast. Okay. I would rather do a podcast so I can control.
You can do everything. You can do it myself. You can do whatever. I mean, you mentioned Joe Rogan earlier. I mean, if you indeed did help him and introduce him back in the day, he's running the number one show now. I mean, undisputed number one show. So I think, man, you should hit him up and see what you can do.
Wow.
You got a million stories. You got plenty of stories to.
Thank you. My friend Dr. Joel Kahn was just on with Joe and had a great time. And Joe's always been a great guy, and he's a badass. He's a perfect combination of teddy bear meets badass. You know, and he's just brilliant.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd love to go on Joe's show.
Yeah, and if you bring Elon Musk on and, you know, smoke some weed and make the Tesla stock crash $1 billion or something, you know, your show's got some power.
Oh my God!
I think so.
You know, I mean, exactly. A guy could have done a gummy, and we would have never known, right?
Right.
But he has to fire it up,
right? Huge puff.
Like he's sitting there with Tommy Chong or something. Oh, come on,
that's awesome. All right, cool. Well, if people want to contact you, if they have, you know, for whatever reason or another, do you have any? Is there a best way for people to contact you for maybe ideas or businesses to pitch?
I think they just go to my website, beauriles.com, BEAURIALS. There's a way to contact me there. That's probably the best way.
Okay.
You know, with stuff.
Cool.
With whatever.
So, yeah, I mean,
good to hear from people.
You do voiceover work, pitching.
Voice
You've done some voiceover work for me, which has been awesome.
What did I do for you? I forgot. What did I do?
Did something for my quad, my Invertix, the quad that went upside down.
Oh yeah,
we did this long, it was like a 4-day shoot, and we threw it on YouTube, and I remember that got 300 views. Got like that time was horribly
but
well
that was a great spent. You did a great video.
It was cool. It was a cool video, but it wasn't the right video for the market and the demographic and everything, but it was super cool. And we had your pitch at the end, and you know, I'm actually working on something where I could perhaps use you, even you in the flesh. If you'd want to help me out with something for the RC drone sort of market, I think I might be able to use you. It'd be pretty cool. I'll get a kick out of it.
I am a pitchman assassin for hire.
You really are. Okay. You really, really are. One of the best.
Oh, well, thank you.
One of the best. Well, I do
appreciate it. You got to check out Matt Wrench, folks. Matt Wrench is the new one.
Matt Wrench.
Matt Wrench.
Okay, what's Matt Wrench?
Bobby. Bobby, come on. This is Matt Wrench. The most... Right? Are you ready for this?
Hit me with it. I'm ready. Hit it.
Right. Right. Well, it's these are adjustable wrenches that fit standard. They fit metric. Even worn out and damaged nuts and bolts with more torque and a better grip than conventional tools.
Oh my God!
You gotta get Met Wrench.
Really?
That way you're not futzing around trying to find the right wrench.
Oh,
Met Wrench fits everything. Okay. M-E-T Met R I. N-C-H, Met Wrench.
Met
Check it
wrench.
Out.
Met Wrench.
Met okay. Wrench. Old gold coming back to a TV and a phone screen near you.
Dude, you are a natural. Oh, I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for coming on
Bobby.
Here. And we'll do it again for sure.
You got it, brother.
All right, so what'd you think about that? I mean, Bo is a natural born salesman. And it's so great when you ask him about a product, his eyes light up and he gets right into the sales pitch mode. And it's just, it's in him. It's in his DNA. And literally right after we recorded this, he pulled up the website for Met Wrench. And it's really cool, actually. It's super cool. It's a very innovative concept on a wrench. So check that out. He's doing some really cool stuff. So thanks again to my friend Bo for coming on the podcast. It was really great to have him. Really great to sit down and have a chat with him. So it was totally awesome. So looking ahead for some future episodes here, I've got some pretty cool guests lined up. People from kind of all walks of life who do some really crazy things. So, so once again, thank you guys for tuning in. This is High Voltage with Bobby Watts. Certainly appreciate the love and the support. If you could go into iTunes or Google Play and rate, comment, leave some feedback, I would really appreciate it. Also on my website, highvoltagepodcast.com, you can go in and see where everything is right there. Once again, really appreciate the support. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I'll catch you next time.